not limited to. Chris Sugarcane of KATV will be joining us here in a little while. Talk to him about the weekend in sports that was Razorback baseball, track and field, PGA, NBA. Speaking of, guys are back on the court tonight. A couple of good games tonight. The early game, Miami and Chicago. The late game, Oklahoma City and Memphis, which has become a very interesting series. And, of course, with Westbrook out, it becomes doubly so. Derek Fisher has risen to the occasion. A couple other guys for Oklahoma City, unfortunately for Kevin Durant and company, have not necessarily risen to the occasion. And anyway, they are the late game tonight. So if you're looking for NBA, good bet for you is to settle in and enjoy. Also going to be joined today by Ken Hatfield, former Razorback football coach, who I'm actually going to get a chance to play with today. So hopefully I'll get a little more dirt on David Basil, as if there wasn't enough out there already. Also expecting to talk to Cliff Harris, who is an OBU grad and a Cowboys legend. And I look forward to visiting with him. And he's got a personal story related to ALS as well. So anyway, busy day out here at Maumelle Country Club, which appears to be in spectacular shape. Have not had a chance to play out here in the last few days, but have played out here in the last couple of weeks. And always a fun track, and this is a great event. This is the 13th year, which is remarkable. The guys that are responsible and gals that are responsible for putting this event on done a great job in keeping it rolling. From a baseball standpoint, again, for Arkansas, pretty exciting when you look at they have positioned themselves to maybe get us a little bit of a break, Big Baby. We may not be doing the early portion of our show come SEC tournament time, at least on day one, if Arkansas stays in that number three position in the bracket. I believe their first pitch in their game would be 9:30. They'd be the first game of Wednesday. Arkansas has played itself in a position where they will not be playing on Tuesday, no matter what shakes out this next weekend against Auburn. Again, Arkansas, the third-best record overall in the SEC, a game ahead of South Carolina. And South Carolina is, of course, a team that Arkansas handled earlier in the season, although the Gamecocks playing pretty well. They've won four in a row. Not quite as well as Vanderbilt, which has won 12 games straight now. Amazing. LSU also doing a good job, leading the West now, 21-6 in conference play, 45 wins overall. 45 wins. A couple of gaudy records. 45-7 for LSU, and for Vanderbilt, 45-6. Pretty amazing. So bottom line is, at this point, if the season were to end today, Arkansas would be the 3 seed. And again, it's a double elimination in Hoover, Alabama. Arkansas would play Wednesday against the winner between the 11 seed and the 6 seed. And I have not gone to the trouble of working through what those seeds would be. But again, no matter what it would be, Arkansas would certainly be in position to win that game. You know, we've had that debate before. Do you really want to win, or do you want to give your guys a little more rest and maybe not necessarily win the SEC tournament? The thing is, if you win and don't have any losses along the way, it becomes much less of a task for the team that rolls through. So if Arkansas would win that game, then they would play again on Thursday at 4:30. If they win that game, they would move on and play Friday and Saturday. So basically they got to play pretty much every day regardless all the way through. So it's not so easy to do for Arkansas, even if they don't have a single loss in the SEC tournament. They are done on Sunday regardless, and again, the earliest they would play, I believe, would be the next Friday in a regional. And the way Arkansas has got it going right now, you would think that they would be in line for a regional at home, and we'll update the rankings when we get that information. If you want in today, 433-1037, 1-800-477-1037. And, of course, it is a Game Balls and Jockstraps Monday. And certainly plenty to go around, I'm sure, from over the weekend. You can also hit me on Twitter, at JustinAkery7, if you're interested. You can email the show, thezone at 1037thebuzz.com. And we also accept Keith Lee's Service Company Live fan feedback as a form of payment. And if it's really good, we'll read it on the air. If it's terrible, it still might get read, depending on how much stuff we got going on. Over the weekend in the NBA, the Miami Heat handling their business, and I would think that they are in pretty good shape to probably run away with this one. And Chicago has done a good job of making it interesting after winning game one, but I can't imagine that they're going to do much more. It is now 2-1 Heat with a chance to go 3-1 tonight for Miami. Chicago Bulls coach Tom Thibodeau fined $35,000 for his postgame comments about the officiating after the loss in game three against the Heat. Over the weekend, he says, I guess this was Friday, he says, I see how things are going. I watch very closely. We're not going to get calls. That's reality. That may be true, but when you talk like that, I guess it gets you a a fine. From my angle, he says, I saw a guy basically flop. One of his players, Nazir Muhammad, and LeBron James got into it. James kind of gave him a little bump, and Muhammad knocked him to the floor. He says it was a flop from LeBron James, and it looked like he was maybe acting just a little bit. He did put on a good show, though. Thibodeau says, I don't think it was warranted. It warranted an ejection. I understand a flagrant foul. I understand that, but ejection, no. As far as James goes, he says, it's kind of the same as when people said I was overrated. I have the same response. I don't need a flop. I play an aggressive game, but I don't flop. It's been interesting watching Chicago try to stay alive with the injury issues they've had, three significant injuries for this team, and the fact that they've been able to hang in as long as they've hung in there is pretty remarkable. But I can't imagine that they're going to do a whole lot more damage than they've already done. It would not surprise me at all if Miami rolls now and goes wins the next couple and closes this one out early on. Do have some other good series, of course. Indiana and New York is shaping up to be a very intriguing series. The Pacers got a win over the weekend against New York, and the Pacers were whining a little bit more than they have been in the series, maybe playing down to the New York Knicks mentality, but certainly from a game standpoint, they played well enough to win. And, boy, you want to talk about absolutely choking the life out of Oklahoma City tonight. Can Memphis, if they win tonight, 8:30 start. That game's a TNT. The early game also a TNT game tonight. Miami, Chicago at 6 o'clock, which I will be hustling home from this tournament to try to catch some of that. If you want to weigh in on the PGA or you want to talk baseball, track and field, whatever you want in on, NBA, come get you some at 433-1037. Pat on the back to the Warriors, who got a win yesterday against the San Antonio Spurs. A couple of these games now have gone to overtime. Previously, the Warriors unable to get it done, lost in double overtime in the first game of this series, and much better outcome from Golden State in this one, a 10-point win. In fact, the Spurs, I don't think they ended up scoring much, if anything, in the overtime. I want to say maybe they got shut out in overtime. I didn't like the last possession. The next time we get Joe Klein in, I'll have to talk to him. Basically, it was a make a bucket and win or go to overtime situation for Golden State. And so they did what is so irritating to me, and we've seen this before. No matter how good an offense is working, teams go to that same situation in the final play. They don't run offense. They strictly put a guy out front. They let him dribble, 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 make one little move and pull it for a jump shot, typically. And that's what happened in the game yesterday with Golden State. They put Jared Jack out front, and he had a good game, no doubt. But they put him out front and let him dribble as long as he wanted to until the clock got under 5 seconds. He finally makes a move, pulls up, bricks a jumper off the front of the iron. They do go to overtime and dominate, though. So it all worked out in the end for the Warriors, who did get a handful of significant contributions in the victory. And, of course, Curry's been playing on a bum ankle, but played well enough. 22 points for him, and now they've tied the series at 2 apiece. Here's a couple of highlights, including a big play by Steph Curry in the overtime, a bucket and one.
Curry winding down a little bit of the shot clock. Gets a screen by Landry. Curry head fake. Drives by Duncan to the rim. Underhand. Good, and he got fouled! And we're going back to Texas with this series tied at 2 games apiece. A gutsy, grimy comeback win for the Golden State Warriors. We will have a game 6 at Oracle. They close out this game 21-5 in the last 8.5 minutes. And they celebrate here at Oracle a 97-87 Golden State victory.
Flip the script on them. Of course, the Spurs came back on the Warriors in game one and forced overtime. Ended up winning in double overtime. The Warriors finishing strong in this one and the victory by 10 in overtime. So tie the series there. We got a real interesting matchup there going forward. You know, Matt Jones made a great point last week, I thought, though. He talked about how he didn't have a lot of faith in the Warriors because of the fact that this is a jump-shooting team, and when you're not hitting your jump shots, you got issues. Well, the Warriors bricked it up in Game 3 and got smacked around. It looked like maybe if they don't hit their jump shots, they're going to have a hard time. Well, they shot it well enough to win yesterday, and it was good to see their guys go to the rack, including Steph Curry's bucket there you heard in the highlight package. Here's Mark Jackson following the victory, certainly excited about the potential going forward, and he thinks this team is in line for something pretty special.
I've been talking about this group all year long, and I'm just so glad that a national TV audience had an opportunity to see exactly what's been taking place in this area. Like I said, this is the greatest group of guys that I've been around, a bunch of warriors, no pun intended. I'm a guy that believes, again, that God has his hands on this team, and things are going to fall into place. And I'm also a guy that believes in these guys. No quit. it's tougher to let go of the rope when everybody's holding on, when everybody's tied together. They inspire one another, and truly they inspire me. This is what these guys have been. This is how hard they've worked. This is how they're committed. It's a special season for this basketball team, this entire organization and this fan base. And we've done things to show us, when we do them, how good we can be. And I'm not surprised by anything.
Warriors, come out to play.
You love that clip.
It's a great movie.
Warriors.
What movie?
Warriors.
You keep telling me that. I've still never seen it. What is the movie?
I'll bring it for you.
Okay. It sounds like something you would hear in like Game of Thrones or something, which I'm totally hooked on, by the way. Okay, so tonight again, we got that one tied up into a piece. Miami and Chicago. Miami with a chance to go 3-1 tonight. I will be surprised if they don't. And again, look, I'm not knocking Chicago. What they've done is remarkable. I mean, knocking out Brooklyn, as shorthanded as they've been, and going through what they've gone through and dealing with Miami and winning game one in Miami is amazing to me. But I will be surprised if Miami doesn't win tonight. And that means 3-1, you're basically assured of winning the series. Oklahoma City's in the same boat. They're in a tough spot. They're in the same spot as Chicago is. Injury issues costing them a chance to advance. Not to mention the fact that Memphis is playing darn well. Conley has become a legitimate star in these playoffs. Everybody knows about the 1-2 punch inside with Randolph and Gasol. I just, you know, I can't see Oklahoma City getting it done. I'll be very surprised if they win. So if Memphis goes up 3-1 again, you're in the same boat. It's over. Tomorrow's games, New York and Indiana resume. Indiana leads that one 2-1 with a chance to go up 3-1 at home. Be a devastating blow, I think, to Indiana if they can't pull that off on their home court. And then the late game tomorrow, Golden State and San Antonio, which is one we will all be watching closely. That is a huge game five now with that series tied at 2 apiece. Game balls and jock straps. I will give a game ball to Steph Curry, who has been able to play through injury. And 22 is kind of his magic number. I think he's had 22 a couple of times in a third quarter alone. He had 22 points in the game last night. He had 22 points in the game the other night. I don't know why that's become a magic number for him. But he has certainly had more than his share of moments. Barnes had 26 yesterday, did not shoot it especially well, but certainly had a big game for them. Klay Thompson, a bit of an off night, 5 of 13 in the game, 10 points, but again, enough to win. And then Jared Jack, the guy who took the last shot, as I was complaining about the offensive call as far as the way they ran that last set, it just drives me nuts. But teams continue to do it. Anyway, Jack had 24 points of 9 of 16. Didn't even have an issue with him taking the shot necessarily. I had an issue with what they ran, which was basically nothing. That whole, as we welcome in Chris Kane now of KATV, that it drives me crazy, and I got to get Joe Klein on this next time we have him in.
What?
But basically, when it comes down to a last shot, teams don't run offense.
No.
They basically just let a guy dribble, 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 make one move and pull it for a jump shot.
They figure it's no shot clock. You've got to take into account the fact that if you have a turnover there at some point, and you don't put it in your best player's hand. I'd rather put it in my best player's hands one-on-one than run an offense and risk turning it over. And I know you can't think about risking a turnover, but if you turn over and they get a timeout and take it down the court and they get the last shot, then you look like the idiot.
That's true. I guess.
Not to say you should think, oh, I could turn the ball over here, because you should have confidence in your team. But
right.
That is a more likely to have a turnover when you run an offensive set than one guy, your best player, playing one-on-one.
Okay. I understand what you're saying there. And this is unique in that, I will give you this. This was a no-lose situation. What if they're down a point and they need a bucket? Don't you run your best offensive set? But all too often we see teams do the exact same thing, whether they need the bucket to win or they need the bucket, or they don't necessarily have to have the bucket and they can still go to overtime.
If you're tied, I'd rather one guy take the shot. But you're right. If you're down, take a chance and get a good shot, not a fadeaway three or a fadeaway jumper that really is an off-balance shot that doesn't have a lot of likelihood of going in.
Yeah, I'd much rather see him go to the rack and force.
Absolutely.
First of all, you get a hopefully a decent look. Second of all, you force the referee's hands into maybe going to the foul line.
Exactly.
So
if you're down, I'm with you. I'd rather run an offensive set, but you don't see it. Like you said, you don't see it often, almost ever.
Well, and look, if that's New York's offense. That's what they do. They give it to Carmelo and let him dribble 15 seconds, and then he shoots.
But he's one of the best scorers in the league.
I have no problem.
I'd rather do that than...
What I'm saying is that's not Golden State's offense.
No,
you don't see that. They move the
with
ball.
With Curry, though, Curry's a perennial scorer, though.
But he's moving.
Sure.
He's usually working off screens. He doesn't stand around and dribble a lot and wait for stuff to
but
sort
of... But he can.
Over.
I mean, he's versatile enough to do that.
No, but what I'm saying is he's not a ball killer. He doesn't just stand out there and dribble.
No, no,
he may take the ball and move with it.
Yeah.
You just don't see a lot of him standing out front like Carmelo does.
Oh, yeah. He's not a car. No, no, not the same style as Carmelo, but.
We've gone 23 minutes.
Score.
And have spent no significant time on the PGA.
We're about. Oh, don't you worry. I can't wait to give the jock strap in this one. It's going to be a big one. Huge.
Is it wet?
It's William the Refrigerator Perry style, big and wet. After a long day of practice.
I'm a little more torn on this than I thought I would be.
Really?
Yep. I'm a little surprised by myself.
Okay.
I'm mad at myself for being torn. Let's go ahead, yeah, let's go ahead and take that time out just a minute earlier here. Come back with much more. We are at Maumelle Country Club. It is the Paul Dunn Charity Golf Tournament, and we are raising money to raise awareness and hopefully, you know, help fund research and combat ALS, which, again, better known to most people as Lou Gehrig's disease, although I think there's been enough conversation about this disease over the last several years. People have caught on with the ALS, too. So I can't say exactly the words it stands for, but it's a nasty disease without a doubt. And today is a great event. It's one that's been going on for 13 years and raising awareness about it. So we'll talk more about that coming up. Got some special guests coming up as well later on. Coach Hatfield, Ken Hatfield going to join us here. Also,
wonderful,
a Cowboys legend, Cliff Harris, going to join us here at our broadcast location. So big day ahead.
Spectacular.
And Chris Kane, I must point out, there are 17 chairs here. And he sat right next to me when he came in today. It was sort of like if we were in a theater and there was no one else in here, would you sit right in the chair next to me?
You reached up, you signaled me this way.
No, I wasn't signaling you to
you
sit on that
here,
headphone.
Sit.
That was your headset. I was signaling your headset.
It didn't seem that way.
I need a buffer chair. I'm uncomfortable. There are 45 chairs in here, and we're sitting in the only chair right next to me.
Can we scoot a little closer?
Why don't you just sit on my lap?
Santa.
Ho, ho, ho. We'll be back in a moment.